Well, it's a sad day. We're getting some breaking news into us right now from OceanGate. This is the company that was responsible for sending this submersible vehicle down 12,000 feet in an expedition, a tourist expedition, to look at the wreckage of the Titanic. The company has now come out and said it is presumed that all five individuals on board that sub are indeed dead. We're going to be talking momentarily with a scientist and with a journalist who has been down some 12, 13,000 feet to the very bottom of the ocean floor himself, and actually was out of communication for some time with his mother's ship. This would have been back in the year 2000. And he's a scientist who has taught at Harvard and at Cornell. Been a student of physics his whole life, and obviously a professor of physics as well. He also was the lead scientist at ABC News. And he went down in a Russian sub that many years ago. So you can imagine a lot of memories are coming back to Dr. Michael Guillen, and we're going to be talking with him in just a short moment. But first of all, just the news that is coming in. Again, the company saying itself that we have to assume at this point that these five individuals are in fact dead. I am Trish Regan. This is The Trish Regan Show. We are brought to you, as always, in part by LegacyPMInvestments.com. 1-866-589-0560 is their number. Again, as this news comes in, we are learning that there was some debris that was discovered, and the debris is believed to belong to that particular sub. As early as 7 o'clock this morning, around 7:08 Eastern time, they ran out of oxygen. So you have to start to say to yourself, at that point, when the oxygen is gone, they had 96 hours for it, they ran out, how much could they continue to circulate in that very, very small vehicle where they were all cramped in? I mean, you couldn't even stand up. Think about that. The cold that you would be suffering from when you're down that far, the pressure that you're feeling, not to mention the psychological sort of warfare that you're going through as an individual, as you know that you're running out of oxygen. I mean, I can't even fathom. My heart goes out to all of those families right now. And we also got to talk about, you know, what the heck are they doing? Like $250,000. I'm sorry. At some point, maybe if you're that loaded and you're a billionaire and money is no object, at what point do you go thrill seeking in ways that are really, frankly, almost foolish, right? One of the guys had also been up in Bezos's space venture. I get it. You want to see new things and we're all curious, but the risk that was taken on is pretty extraordinary. And then you consider the fact that this particular individual that had started OceanGate didn't have entirely the same, dare I say, respect for military operations. I mean, look, I'm a little bit angry now, right? I imagine so many of you are. And so I think it's natural for us to feel this frustration. If in fact these five people are dead because, you know, they bought these 250,000 tickets to go effectively see this wreckage, which in and of itself is sadly a cemetery, right? Because so many lives, 1,000 lives were lost there that many years ago when the Titanic sank. To spend all that money and then to have a CEO who's quoted in various places as not having taken quite maybe the safety precautions or employed the safety individuals that maybe he should have, well, then that can start to make us very frustrated. I can anticipate that the lawsuits will be significant against the company. The company's CEO, of course, was on board as well. But when you see things printed, and I can save this until after the interview with the scientists. So if you're looking at these things as well, mention them in the chat or the comments below, because we're going to look at all of those and discuss. Yesterday, it felt a little too premature to talk about the New York Post story, which was quoting the CEO of the company who said that they had no interest in 50-year-old white male scientists, that he felt that, you know, they needed a more diverse approach, which meant much younger people. And he was talking about, you know, 22-year-olds, but the kind of the knock on the 50-year-old white scientist, I'm like, really, was that necessary? Really, basically, buddy, you just wanted cheap labor, right? Because you felt like a 22-year-old could run a gaming console and that they would be better at operating your machinery than the guy or gal who had been in the Navy their entire career. Again, I'm gonna save that right now because I think in this moment in time, we need to be somewhat respectful, and I'll save that to later in the show. And I do, as I said, want to get to the interview that I just did moments ago. This was actually just before the news broke. Just before the news broke that the company itself is saying effectively that, you know, this is sort of it. Let me take you to the Wall Street Journal, the headlines that we're seeing coming out right now from the Wall Street Journal, and I'll show you this. I mean, these are the people that were on board, of course. So sad to see this. A father and son, they were from Pakistan. There was, of course, the individual that owned the company himself. You had Hamish Harding, a billionaire who lived in Dubai, out of originally, I believe, the UK. The Paul Henry Narjolet, he did have, I believe, some military background or some maritime background that was military influenced. Who was, I believe, French. Suleiman and Shahzad Daywood. This was the father and son team. I mean, it's really just, and of course, the owner of the company itself. And it's just extraordinary when you think about these five lives that have been lost, and they kind of signed their ticket when they agreed to go on this voyage. We are getting, of course, reports that there is debris that has been located. So that's important because I think a lot of people are seeking some kind of closure. I did do the favor of actually going out and seeing some of the conspiracy theorists out there. And one of the things that, you know, you see is, okay, well, where's the debris? Where's, you know, and people are looking for this kind of closure, I suspect. Otherwise, they're wondering how these five billionaires just made off, you know, and were never to hear from again. And there were quite a few different theories going on over on TikTok. And people were sort of questioning, you know, how anybody could just disappear. Well, you can disappear because you are down at the bottom of the ocean, 12, 13,000 feet down under, you know, under sea level where the pressure is enormous. And if you have so much as one teeny tiny little hole in that vehicle, then you are in jeopardy of being smashed effectively like a can. Like a can. The pressure is so massive. So you've got to be extraordinary in your safety efforts before ever venturing into one of these things. Because again, the pressure is so significant. If there's so much as a microscopic hole and the air is getting out, what happens? That whole thing will just collapse. And so now as we learn of debris coming in, it is devastating. I want to go right now to my interview with the scientist. This is incredible. You're going to hear me say it again when I speak with him. But he, in the year 2000, went down in a Russian version of this. I was a student at the time. I remember the whole thing pretty well and just thinking to myself, gosh, I hope the Russians have really good safety. I mean, to me, that's you know, I'm all about safety. We don't need to take any unnecessary risks. Again, I'm going to save that, and I'm going to save my anger for the other side of the interview once you hear from the scientist, because I think we need to get into that. But nonetheless, he went down there. I remember thinking, gosh, I hope the Russians like have the decent technology. And he himself lost contact with the mothership for a short period, but eventually was rescued to safety. They reestablished contact and he came back up, and, you know, he lives to talk about it. It's an emotional interview. I'll warn you of that. And at some point, he gets very, very, very upset. You're going to see that later in the interview. It's, again, why I just want to be a little bit respectful here. And we can slam this company on the other side, because I think that needs to happen. And we need to ask questions about why people are going down there if it's not for scientific research. And why we wouldn't be doing everything possible. A company like this would not do the necessary things possible to ensure that they have the right safety in place, right? Is that too much to ask? I don't think so. Okay, we're going to talk about it some more. I'm going to weigh in on some of your comments, but I need you to hear this interview again with Dr. Michael Guillen. As we continue to watch all of this unfold at this moment in time, as we continue to pray, and I think that we all can't help but keep our hopes up right now, I'm very pleased to be joined by Dr. Michael Guillen. Dr. Michael Guillen actually has been down there himself to look at the Titanic. He did so back in the year 2000, some 23 years ago. Dr. Guillen, I remember you doing this. You were the first journalist to go aboard a submersible. You were the chief science correspondent and chief science contributor there at ABC News at the time. And I remember this actually quite well. It was a big Barbara Walters special, and it was a very big deal. And it was very concerning because the country was worried about you and the Russians that you were on the submersible with, because you had a very similar type thing, not for as long, of course. But first of all, I just want to thank you for joining us right now. I know it's been a rough night for you, as a lot of images are flooding back into your head. And I know how worried you are, as we all are, about these individuals on board. But thank you for being here, and walk us through what this was like for you, what they may be going through in these final moments.
Yes. First of all, Trish, thank you for having me on your show. And yes, it was in September of 2000, I was invited to go down. We left from Halifax, Nova Scotia, went out to the point in the North Atlantic where the Titanic went down. Mm-hmm. And the dive went well. It took us 2.5 hours to get down to the surface. Then when we approached the bow of the ship, a very profound experience. We paused for a moment of prayer for the people who lost their lives there. And I think that's when it really hit me that this is more than just a shipwreck. This is a graveyard. And so we went from the bow to the stern, and that's when the problem began. Because when the Titanic sank, as you know, the bow went down, the stern did a somersault, landed on its back, and exposing the propeller. So my attention was on that propeller when we were going from the bow to the stern. It just stuck out like a sore thumb. It's very shiny. It's huge. And then I sensed that our submersible was accelerating. I'm thinking, no, this isn't right. It should be decelerating. And yeah. I later found out that it's because we were caught in an underwater current. It took us right into between the blades of the propeller and the inverted poop deck. And huge chunks. I mean, it was all very dramatic. Chunks of the ship started raining down on us. And then I realized right then and there that this was no minor oopsie, that this was a life-threatening crisis. So we all pretty much fell silent because we wanted to leave the pilot concentrate on trying to get us out of there.
Had they prepared you for that? Did you have any idea? Okay, you're a scientist by background, so you probably knew, but what's your hunch? I mean, do they tell people, okay, listen, if there is an issue, we get silent, because if you panic, you're going to use up more oxygen and make it worse.
Yeah, use up more oxygen. And we were told a story on ship when we were getting ready to dive. The captain we had a bunch of seminars getting us ready for it. And we all knew, I mean, we were all grown-ups. We understood the risk. But what he told us was a story, and it stuck to my mind. And when we had the collision, I immediately flashed back on it. He told us a story of a person who was in a similar situation and in his panic went for the escape hatch right above his head. And of course, thinking that he's going to escape, of course, that only sealed his doom. And so my first reaction after recognizing our dire situation and falling silent, I kind of repositioned myself. I was on my stomach so that if anybody else in that little 3-man sub would think to go to that escape hatch, I was going to gang tackle him. I'm not a big guy, but you know what? If even anybody looked at that hat, that was my focus. And it kind of helped take my mind off of things. And then being a scientist, I try to figure out, okay, this is a problem. We need to find a solution. But very quickly, I realized there is no solution.
So the idea is if even just a speck of oxygen were to get in, it would actually flatten the entire vehicle and everyone inside because of all the pressure under sea.
Yeah. If there is even the tiniest leak, Trish, That water is in bone-crushing pressure. There's no other word for it. If you were to expose yourself to that pressure, the air in your body would be completely removed in less than the blink of an eye. So if you open that hatch, even by a crack, even by a needle point, a little pinpoint, that water will come out like a laser, cut you in half, and it'll fill that cabin, and it's over. It's game over for
You
you.
know, Dr.
So
Guillen, this is one of the things that's come up because there's been, you know, look, I mean the country, the world has been captivated by this story. I think, you know, all of us are just imagining how tremendously awful this would be. And so everybody's heart goes out to them, but then there's some anger as well. You know, this isn't cheap, right, to go down there. So people are like, wow, it's $250,000. And then on top of that, people are saying, well, what the heck in terms of OceanGate, the company itself, there have been some comments that had been made by the CEO, who, by the way, is on board, that may have suggested he didn't quite have the same adherence to safety that one would want, right, when you go down there. I remember when you went down, I was like, oh, you know, he's going with the Russians. I hope that they are really vigilant about their safety. I mean, safety matters, because what you're saying is if there's one little teeny tiny hole, it could be game over. You know, and that's, I guess that's one of the big questions right now. As we hear, of course, that there have been these sounds. I mean, I don't know. I'm just a layperson. I'm encouraged by that they were on, you know, every 30 minutes, and I believe for 3 minutes at a time. That was an encouraging interval to see. What's your gut reaction at this point about what those noises may have been?
I have said all along from day one, Trish, that when they lost communications an hour and 40 some minutes in, very early in the game, by the way, they probably would not have made it to the surface, to the bottom of the ocean then. It takes 2 to 3 hours, but be that as it may, the fact that they had a communications failure at the very least so early in the mission, I knew right away that if I were in that thing, I'd start banging on the inside of that sub with everything I had, my shoes, my cup, the utensils, anything hard. Why? Because sound travels really well in seawater. That's why whale songs can travel halfway around the world. The ocean water is just in a very effective means of conveying sound. So when I first heard, what is it, the other day, when Coast Guard announced they've heard noises, I said, hooray, okay, maybe that's what they're doing. Because if I were the pilot of that ship, that's what I'd say, okay, there are five of us, like, let's take shifts. I wouldn't even wait for 30 minutes. I'd say, let's just take shifts and let's just make as much noise as we can, because I knew the rescuers were sending out sonars and hydrophones, listening for any untoward sound. That was their best hope for being located. So I became very excited, but then I heard the If you listen to the Coast Guard very carefully, well, that's every 30 minutes, and we're not sure what the noise is. And I'm thinking, okay, this could be just a loose piece of metal down there. Who knows? We can't jump to the conclusion that it's being caused by the people in there. I want to, and I'm hoping that that's the case, right? Because it's an indication that they're alive. So let's hope and pray that that's the case. Now, the most recent revelation just minutes ago for the Coast Guard that they have found debris. Well, my initial reaction was, well, wait a minute, there's an entire debris field between the bow and the stern. I saw it. I was just inches away from it. Our ship, at that point, when we were traversing from the bow to the stern, our pilot put us way low to the ground. So this is where you see women's shoes, you see suitcases, you see medicine cabinets, you see
You
cases of
still see
champagne.
it there.
Oh, yeah, there is a huge, that's why it's called a debris field. I mean, it's littered, and honestly, Trish, that's where it really came home to me what a massive tragedy this was. This when the Titanic broke in two, it was like a Christmas cracker, and all the stuff in the ship just poured out and filled that field between the stern, between the bow and the stern, with debris. So I'm thinking, okay, you found debris. There's a lot of debris down there. So they're being very cryptic. I don't know. It's because maybe they don't have enough information. So I'm waiting for the next announcements to see if we can get some clarification. Have these remote operating vehicles, these ROVs, detected this debris? Right, but is it separate from the debris field of the Titanic? In which case, that's very significant, because remember when the shuttle Challenger exploded? That was a
I
terrible thing.
do. I
I
do.
covered it, right? I covered it. The school teacher was on
But
board.
she was one of our school teachers from my home state of New Hampshire. It was a very, and I was a kid in school at the time. I remember it well.
Christa McAuliffe.
Christa McAuliffe.
But NASA spent months going around that whole debris field, collecting every piece of shrapnel and evidence they could, trying to piece together what happened. My fear here, Trish, is that we may never find the vessel. That's a possibility we need to prepare ourselves for. Hopefully they will. And even if it's in pieces, God forbid, I don't want to even go there. But if it is, we need to collect all those pieces of debris. Otherwise, we will never think about this. We will never know what happened. It'll be like Amelia Earhart. It'll be like they just disappeared somewhere in the ocean, never to be seen again. And if we can't know what happened, we can't fix the problem. So this, to me right now, the search should definitely continue. And whether these poor five souls down there are rescued alive or not, we need to understand what happened so that we can fix the problem. In the meantime, we need to stop all trips to the Titanic effective immediately. That's my opinion.
Well, I'm with you on that. I absolutely am. So we learned that as of Thursday morning, shortly after 7 a.m. Eastern time, they ran out of oxygen. What does that mean, essentially? I mean, how much longer do you have to go when the oxygen tank is depleted?
You know, that was very much uppermost in my mind when I was trapped down there. In fact, the first thought was, okay, how much oxygen do we have? And in my case, our vessel was small. We had hours of oxygen. Now, this company, OceanGate, claims that they had at most, and if you read the fine print, they say at most, I think it was 96 hours, right? So that's an upper limit, which we've passed by that upper limit. Now, people have always said, well, you know, the pilot of the ship could tell people to rest easy, to breathe slowly. Well, good luck with that. I mean, you're stuck in a tin can, buried at presumably at the bottom of the ocean, because I think this thing has settled, because it hasn't surfaced. And just the law of gravity, it's just going to bring you down. So I'm guessing that they're at the bottom of the bottom of the ocean. Good luck telling them in the people in the dark, in the cold, they're realizing what's happened, that to tell them to stay calm and breathe easy. I don't think that's very realistic. But even if they do that, there's another problem that people don't talk about. It's not just a lack of oxygen, Trish. Mm-hmm. You exhale carbon dioxide. Now, there was a scrubber on board whose sole job was to constantly remove carbon dioxide from the environment. But it's almost certain that this vessel has suffered a catastrophic failure, including the electrical system. So I'm presuming, and again, I'm just speculating, but I think it's a very reasonable hypothesis that this scrubber is not working anymore. So it's not just a lack of oxygen, it's also an excess of carbon dioxide that you need to worry about. They're fighting, in other words, a double-barreled problem.
Dr. Hien, when you went down, were you scared at all ahead of time? Again, you're a scientist, you're a journalist. I know, even myself as a journalist, I've been in some dicey places and probably in places that, you know, I wouldn't go as a normal citizen in my life. Like Trish Regan isn't, you know, taking her family there on vacation. It's not something that I would do maybe normally, but as a journalist, you're like, okay, this is my job, this is my career, and you kind of put on a different hat and you're a little bit more professional about some of these things. You had sort of a double whammy there, both as a scientist and as a journalist, to have this desire, right, to go down and see what was there and to experience that. Were you scared? I mean, obviously you were when things went south, but ahead of that process.
I received the invitation to be the first journalist to go down and report from the Titanic through my producer. And I forget which producer it was. And so when she told me about it, my immediate reaction is I don't really want to do it, because all my life I've had a deathly fear of water. I still have it. And I've never learned how to swim. So I thought, that's the last thing I want to do. Gosh, go out to the North Atlantic and go down 2.5 miles. Are you kidding me? And then in a little tin can, is also a little claustrophobic. But really, the hydrophobia was a big deal for me. But then I sucked it up and I said, look, this is my job. How can the science editor at ABC News possibly turn this down? And plus, as a scientist and as a reporter, I saw this as a valid opportunity to report Titanic. I'm an educator at heart. I've taught physics all my life, at least my adult life at Cornell and then at Harvard. So there was the teacher in me that said, okay, I'd like to see this ship because there are some interesting things going on down there. Bacteria are eating up the metal and so forth and so on. So it's fascinating science. So I said, okay, let's do it. But yeah, all the months leading up to it, oh my gosh, Tris, I was dying a thousand deaths, to be honest with you. I was like, oh, do I really want to do this or should I wimp out? But I couldn't wimp out.
And it was a
Right up
big
until the
deal.
moment I went in there to that and they sealed the hatch, I'm thinking, okay, in for a penny, in for a pound, here I go.
Right. And how long were you under?
About 8 hours plus, because 2.5 hours down, 2.5 hours up, and then the tour itself was like including the, the accident and all. Yeah, I would have been closer to maybe 9 or 10 hours, something like that. But as I say, you lose track of time. So whether you're trapped, trust me on this, Trish, if you're trapped at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, whether it's 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 days, it's an eternity. You just lose track of time because you're in utter darkness. And it is genuinely scary. It's terrifying. It's not even
So you can't see anything. You don't have even a, like a battery powered light.
no. Well, you could, but you can't see outside the vessel. You can see yourself inside if there's an interior cabin light for sure. But in terms of
Goodness.
seeing what's going on out there, you look out the porthole and you see it's pitch black unless he turns on the spotlight. But you don't want to do that because you don't want to use up the electricity unnecessarily. So yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You're basically isolated from the rest of the world. You may as well be on another planet. And by the way, the
So,
bottom of the
yeah.
Atlantic Ocean does look like the surface of the moon.
Really?
It really does. Yeah, when you land, he turned on the spotlight and I looked at it as far as I'll never forget when he did that. And I'm like, my gosh, this is like I've landed on the moon. There's like hardly any life out there and it's all gray, sand, and like the moon. That's the closest way to describe the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. It's amazing. It's
Incredible.
amazing.
Incredible. I mean, it's got to be, given your astronomy background, kind of an extraordinary thing to see. So it sounds like, I mean, look, we want to hold out hope and we want to be optimistic, but it sounds like, the realists, I guess, in us, are pretty concerned that this will not end well for these individuals. And I think it's sort of like, okay, well, what do we do next? Where do we go from here? And your point about, okay, no more missions, no more tourist vacations, whatever you want to call them, down to the bottom of the Titanic. I mean, would you say all submersibles right now that are sort of, for pleasure, or is this just this particular one because it's so deep and because there's so much debris down there that could get in the way or that you could bump into that might hurt the submersible itself?
I don't call for a permanent ban. I think there's legitimate science to be done for sure, but I think all the entire world has to agree that these lives, if we do lose them, I hope we don't. I don't want to even say it. I don't
Yeah,
want to
I
even
know.
utter those
I know.
words. I don't want to give up on anybody. But if indeed that's the case, we don't want them to have lost their lives in vain. The least we can do to honor their memories is to say, let's just pause. Let's take a deep breath. Just like we paused the US space program, remember after the Challenger, we shut it down because we wanted to know what went wrong and how can we avoid it in the future. So I'm calling for a temporary pause, not a permanent ban. And then let's just sort it out and ask two questions. Why do you want to go down to the Titanic? And how do you propose to get down there? Those are two questions that need to be answered honestly. And I do think the whole idea of the Titanic wreck site being a tourist destination, honestly, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. And I'm just trying to be gentle about it. But having been there, almost having lost my life, I understand the seriousness of the trip. Going to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean is not like taking a dive in your backyard swimming pool. It's a very different thing. And plus, this is sacred ground. It's not just the site of a shipwreck. People lost their lives, more than 1,000 of them. This is their final resting place. Let them rest in peace. And when I was down there, I wanted to make sure I wasn't a trespasser. I felt this enormous responsibility to be respectful. And from that moment when we had that prayer in the bow, throughout then my ordeal and then coming back up, I have a new reverence for it. It's not just a wreck, it's a cemetery. It's where
I
people lost their lives.
hear you on that. I am with you on that, and it's an important thing to say. It's an important thing to say, Dr. Kien, right now. Well, we'll continue to say our prayers. We appreciate you joining us today at this monumental and difficult time, and thank you for all your insight.
You're welcome, Trish. You keep working hard.
Oh, we will. We will. We will stay on this, and we'll continue looking for answers. So we may be asking you back as we continue to get them. We appreciate it again today. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. God bless you.
Wow. So again, we just heard from Dr. Guillen. And if you're just tuning in right now, we have some breaking news to report. The U.S. Coast Guard has now come out and said that indeed the five people on board are presumed dead. There was, according to the Coast Guard, a catastrophic implosion that killed all five passengers there on board that submersible that was there. It was called the Titan. And it was there to view the wreckage of the Titanic. As you heard from Dr. Guillen just moments ago, there's a lot of frustration about just why there are tourist expeditions to go see the wreckage of the Titanic, where over 1,000 people lost their lives, a number of family members of the deceased that lost their lives on the Titanic have expressed their outrage because it is, in fact, their final burying ground. And while you might say, okay, this is one thing for science, it's another thing when billionaires are paying all kinds of extraordinary amounts of money to go and see this. Meanwhile, the other issue that keeps coming up is if this is, in fact, in the U.S. Coast Guard is saying it was an implosion, a catastrophic implosion, does that then point to the fault of the company itself, OceanGate? In other words, it did not properly seal its vehicle. It didn't have the proper safety checks. I mean, this is what we started to talk about. And again, in somewhat out of respect for everything, I'm reluctant at this moment to go there, but you know what? I'm just going to, because this is important. And anybody who's going to go in any of these vehicles, whether it's for science, whether it's for pleasure, whether it's for military use, we ought to be doing a heck of a job to make sure that we understand the vulnerabilities. And this, as the scientist said, should be sort of a wake-up call. Let's not let these people pass away in vain. Let's make sure that we understand why this all went so quickly south. Now, it amazes me that an operation this sophisticated, like, no one can go down there, right? That is like, I mean, those guys could go down there, but you can't like man the vehicle down there. They were using a cheap, like some, I don't know, 20 some odd dollar game console from Amazon to run the actual submarine. And there was sort of an arrogance when you read interviews with the CEO of the company, who, by the way, came from a lot of family wealth. It was from like a natural gas oil family, a big, big energy family. And he had a lot of wealth. And then he said he was able to grow it as an investor. And then this was, of course, his pet project. But the arrogance and this sort of disrespect for bureaucratic safety checks, well, that's certainly coming back to haunt him, is it not? In a massive way, because they didn't do what they needed to do. The Coast Guard, the U.S. Coast Guard, also says that those banging noises that they had detected, remember, they were happening, what, every 30 minutes, and that was seen to be an incredibly encouraging sign initially. Well, in fact, those were not related to the Titan, the submersible there. So again, lots of developments coming out at this moment as both the company and the U.S. Coast Guard confirm that this has ended quite tragically, that the Titanic submarine suffered a catastrophic implosion. All five passengers sadly lost, according again to the U.S. Coast Guard's OceanGate, the company that ran this expedition, whose CEO was on board, confirmed it just a short time earlier, saying that yes, all five people are presumed to be dead. They have found some debris from the wreckage, debris that suggests it was totally consistent with the catastrophic loss of the pressure chamber. In other words, the pressure, think about it. It's sort of the law of gravity. You're going underground, and the further you go down, the more you suffer from that. I've heard comparisons to you could just be crushed like a tin can. It's something actually we just heard the scientists mention. I mean, that pressure is just extraordinary. So you could have an explosion from all that pressure. It is, they said, consistent with the catastrophic loss of the pressure chamber, effectively meaning that the sub was crushed under the weight of the sea at some point when it did lose contact with its surface vessel on Sunday. Now, I am sure there are going to be lawsuits upon lawsuits for this company, OceanGate, which presumably would still have some money to pay out. I mean, look, it doesn't change anything, right? You lose your loved ones, and these families seem to be pretty well off as it is. But you asked that question. I asked that question, of course. I think we all do in this kind of environment. And interestingly, in the contract that they signed when they were going down there, they had to acknowledge three times that they could, in fact, die in this expedition. But I would bet any legal expert you talk to would say it's not enough, because while you may be signing on and knowing that, yes, you could die, there's still an expectation that the company's going to do the basic safety checks. And yet, when this gentleman who started the company is on record sort of scoffing at some of that as though it's just bureaucratic red tape, well, then you're going to have yourself, a good lawyer is going to have themselves a case. You also saw the article, maybe some of you did, it was featured in the New York Post, indeed, just yesterday, talking about how he didn't want any of those 50-year-old white men. By the way, he was a 61-year-old white guy himself, but he didn't want the 51-year-old or the 50-year-old white guys around him that might have had something to say from a safety perspective, that had experience on submarines in the Navy. I mean, was he really trying to cut that many quarters? If you read the article, and I'll pull up some of the quotes for you, he goes on to talk about how we don't need them. And, you know, they don't inspire. They're not inspirational, those 50-year-old white guys. I'm like, excuse me? Like, you need people around you to inspire you? Wait a second. I think you need people to make sure that the thingamajig is actually safe, right? I mean, come on. So again, all of this is going to come back to haunt the company for sure when they look to pursue a lawsuit. I'm just going out to some of your comments right now, you guys. And look, it's amazing to think you're signing this contract. Annalise, you're right. You're signing a contract basically to your own death sentence. And I'm not the adventurous type. I have no interest in going to the Titanic or any other wreckage, or even just that far underground in a submarine. It really wouldn't excite me. I would struggle. I struggle from claustrophobia, right? As it is, like in a crowded elevator, it's feeling kind of uncomfortable. And if you've ever been in a crowded elevator and it stops suddenly and you're stuck there, you know what I'm talking about, right? Even if you're alone in that small elevator, it's a very terrifying feeling. So I guess we hope, and we'll get more information out, we would hope that this catastrophic implosion hopefully happened early on, as opposed to giving these individuals way too much time to be thinking about all the challenges that they would be facing as the oxygen wore out or ran out. Because think of all the carbon monoxide filling up in that small, small area. I'm just astonished, like so many people would want to go and do this, and the enormous cost, really. David making the point that a man must know his limitations. And I agree with you. I sort of respect that. It's kind of having enough self-awareness and appreciation of everything in life to understand how lucky we are, right, to be here, and to not take unnecessary risks with your life. And there's a lesson in here that can be applied to everything, literally everything. I mean, you think about how we need to take our health seriously. You think about some of the decisions we make in life. I mean, the most important thing we can do is protect ourselves and our families. And so while something may seem exciting and, you know, the grass seems greener over there, you really do have to remember what's important and how lucky we are to be here. Again, going out to some of the comments, David agreeing with me, Annalise asking if they signed a contract, can they sue? And I do believe absolutely they can. Absolutely. Because I'm sure that there's some expectation there in the contract that the company is doing its own due diligence, right? That they're making sure that they are dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And if in fact they're not doing that, well then that actually presents the opportunity, certainly from a legal perspective, for them to move forward with any legal issues that they may want to pursue. The Titanic tour, this is according to the New York Post, CEO didn't hire 50-year-old white guys because they weren't, quote, inspirational. The OceanGate CEO, whose unfortunately ill-fated voyage has ended quite tragically, once explained how he didn't hire 50-year-old white guys with military experience to captain his vessels because they weren't inspirational. Instead, he said they were unnecessary because, quote, anyone can drive the sub with a $30 game console, video game controller. I'm quoting here, this is an interview that has resurfaced as of late. He said, quote, when I started the business, one of the things you'll find, there are other subcontractors out there, sub-operators out there, forgive me, sub-operators, but they typically have gentlemen who are ex-military submariners, and they, you'll see a whole bunch of 50-year-old white guys, he said. I wanted our team to be younger, to be inspirational, and I'm not going to inspire a 16-year-old to go pursue marine technology, but a 25-year-old, who's a sub-pilot or a platform operator or one of our techs can be inspirational. I'm sorry, are you supposed to inspire him or is he inspiring you? It doesn't really make a ton of sense, but he goes on. So we've really tried to get very intelligent, motivated, younger individuals involved, because we're doing things that are completely new. Translation, cheap. Right? You hire the guy without the experience because he's cheap. And maybe you can inspire him. Maybe he can inspire you. I don't know. I don't really care. Like if I'm going on that thing and paying 250 grand, which by the way would never ever happen. Even if I had 250 grand, I wanted to just throw out the window. Would not happen. Because of what we just discussed, and it's sort of knowing our own limitations in the world. Anyway, do you think, I'm thinking that you're going out and getting the cheap labor, the 22-year-old that maybe inspires you and you inspire him. No, I'm preferring that you're getting the guy or the gal with the military experience. And I don't know why he had to knock 50-year-old white guys specifically, but whatever. Anyway, this is going to be something that I think is going to come back to haunt him in that he was taking or cutting corners. This is another thing he said, apparently. We can train someone to pilot the sub. We can use a game controller so anyone can drive the sub. So anyone? Wow, I mean, and then the sub gets lost? Come on, right? All right, going back out to some of you. Alphonse, good to see you again here. I am reading some of your comments, and you're pointing out that the former director of marine operations at OceanGate said he was terminated in 2018 for raising concerns about the safety quality of the Titan. Exactly. So in other words, there's a whistleblower out there. Somebody has already said, look, this thing is not all that. And so they were raising these issues, as Alphonse correctly points out, as far back as 2018, that there were safety issues. And this was never addressed. And instead, the quotes that I have seen from the CEO suggest that he really didn't want to be bothered with all the bureaucratic red tape. And that is where they're going to have a leg to stand on, right? From a legal perspective, that is where the opportunity will actually be. Because while you may sign a contract saying you know that there's a chance that you could actually die, at the same time, you're assuming that they're taking the necessary precautions. So again, this is David Lockridge, who back in, he worked for the company. He was formerly the director of marine operations there. And he said that in 2018, he was let go after he explained that there were challenges. He wrote in an engineering report, actually, in 18, that the craft under development needed more testing and that passengers may be endangered when it reached extreme depths. This is according to a lawsuit that he actually filed last year in the U.S. District Court in Seattle. OceanGate then sued him that year, accusing him of breaching a non-disclosure agreement. So apparently, like, they could fire him for saying, hey, you might want to improve your safety record, but he can't actually then sue them for firing him and admitting why he thinks they fired. I mean, pretty conceited. That's what I would say. Stuff. So they then accused him of breaching a non-disclosure agreement and filed a counterclaim alleging that he was wrongfully fired for raising questions about testing and safety. He was wrongfully fired. Okay, wow. So Lockridge said in the counterclaim that OceanGate, which, as we discussed, charges a lot of money, $250K a ticket, he said that the vessel would subject passengers to potential extreme danger in an experimental submersible because at 13,123 feet where the Titanic actually sits, the Titan was not equipped to reach those depths. So this is just so sad, and he was so right to call them out. And what's so tragic is that nothing was done. And I think that, you know, Sam Johnson said, but, you know, how rich people couldn't figure this one out, I don't know. I mean, look, maybe those of us, you know, back here on Earth are just a little bit more level-headed about life and more respectful of it. I mean, I just wonder if at some point, you know, you're in the billions and billions of dollars stratosphere, if you just don't quite get it and you don't have the same appreciation for your vulnerability. It's entirely possible. I mean, we should bring a psychologist on to talk about that one, because as Yellow Bear says, it's amazing that people with so much money can do such dumb things. And it's true, because this was kind of a foolish move. But again, I don't suspect that they had any clue. Although, you know what, if that were me, but this is the reporter in me, like, I research everything. So I probably would have found the 2018 lawsuit. I mean, it's part of public records. I would have found that. Like, I would have gone and searched. Have there been any lawsuits for OceanGate before I got on board that sub? And you know, the idea that they would just take this for granted is pretty insane. Again, it's like taking your life for granted. And so as we've been through this, a son and his father were on board. He was in his 20s, so it wasn't like he was a little kid. And then you had the owner of the company from OceanGate, and you had the pilot, you had a billionaire that was living in Dubai, I believe originally from the UK, and it's incredibly sad. Stockton Rush, of course, was the founder of the company, came from a lot of wealth himself and then built it. Paul Henri Nargileau, who was a leading authority there on the Titanic, a diver, he was on board. You had the Daywoods. This would have been the father and son team. They are some of Pakistan's richest. And then you had Hamish Harding, who is a British aviator and explorer and billionaire himself. So, wow. Really just a tragic end. And it's a story that has captivated the nation for days now. I mean, Joe Biden and Hunter Biden ought to be sending a thank you note, because it's taken some of the heat and attention off of them for the last 24 to 48 hours. As we know, of course, Hunter Biden had a plea deal that feels a little like a slap on the wrist. Anyway, that's not going away, and we will continue our discussion about that tomorrow. But I do think that this has taken the focus away from Capitol Hill in some ways. But it just kind of, I think, has left us all really stunned and asking questions about why anybody would want to do this and whether or not there should be some parameters around this or some respect for the cemetery that exists, all of those people, right? And some appreciation just for life itself, our life, which is so, so precious. And you think about the mistakes that people make in terms of, you know, people that succumb to drugs, people that take unnecessary risks with cars and speed and motorcycles without a helmet. Sorry for any motorcyclists out there, but you know, I come from Live Free or Die New Hampshire, which they mean quite literally, because we have a lot of cyclists that like to come there and not wear their helmets. And I am always sort of horrified, because you hear every year, every summer, of tragic accidents, and you know, you don't have a helmet on, there's not a whole lot to save you. So I guess I've just always had enormous respect for life and the vulnerability of it. And I would never want to take a chance like those five people did. And I know you do things, you know, that the scientist was just explaining, of course, to us, that he was very reluctant to do it at first, but then he thought, well, like, how can I be the scientist here at this news network and not be willing to do this? Because in the name of science, it would be really important to see. And so maybe sometimes you go places or do things work-wise that you might not do in your regular life, but this is their regular life. Like, this is, you know, this was this guy who started this company because this was his passion. He already had enough money. He didn't need to, you know, add to it with this. And you had the other individuals that had, you know, plenty of money and a regular life. Like, this was their regular life. This was exciting for them to do. And hey, I don't quite always get what makes other people tick, but I'm definitely, definitely not in that bucket. Anyway, great to see you all. I mean, so many of you are here on Facebook. So many of you are here on the YouTube channel. I always forget to ask you to subscribe, but do me that favor. Subscribe. If you are listening right now on Apple Podcasts, then that means you missed the live show. So come on over to the YouTube channel, subscribe to YouTube, join me over on Facebook at Real Trish Regan. I'd love to have you there as well. And if you're listening live and you're writing in, and I'm seeing some of the comments, wow, Justin Penn pointing out that sharks can go as far as 10,000 feet and the Titanic is deeper. It's amazing. Again, just looking at all your live comments here. Love hearing from you all. Do me the favor of going over and subscribing to the podcast. You just have to follow. I guess you don't have to subscribe. I got to get my terminology right. And follow it on Spotify as well. It's the Trish Regan Show. And I'd love to have you there. Give thumbs up, 5 stars, all that good stuff. I so appreciate it. again, and if you're listening on those platforms, I need you over here on YouTube and Facebook as well. I appreciate all your kind comments. I really do. Jackie making a funny one. Never trust a Logitech for your life. Yeah, Jamie, got to be young and stupid in order to become old and wise, I guess. I just think that, you know, we're lucky to be here every single day and we should cherish every minute we have. And my heart goes out to those families and all of their loved ones that are dealing with the repercussions of this. And it's a big reminder to value all that we have and the people that we have and the lives that we have. So I thank you for being here. I thank you for being such a wonderful supporter of this show. We are growing enormously, enormously, thanks to all of you. And we'll tackle some of the political stuff again tomorrow, I promise. I want to have an update on this NBA draft. It looks like the guy who's going to get the best, he's number one pick in the draft, and he's French. What's going on? You look at the other players, I've got some real concerns for America. Did you see the test scores that came out for 13-year-old kids? They've been taking these tests since, what, 1971? That's when they started them. These are the worst ever. They've been declining for 3 years in a row. They are the worst ever for reading and math. So what's going on here in this country? Why are we allowing ourselves to slip so far behind? We are in jeopardy of losing what we have, in the sense that we are the number one economy in the world. And even though sometimes it may not feel like it, we do enjoy the best standard of living in the world. Well, we need to stay competitive in order to keep that up. And there's too many policies right now that make us increasingly less competitive. I will save that for tomorrow. Again, my heart goes out to the families. Devastating news. I'm glad we were here all together to talk about it. And I'll see you tomorrow.